I'm delighted to see how many of you have brought your spouses back for me to change this morning. It's going to be really exciting. See what happens in their lives, y'all. It's going to be great. You know, it's really sweet. Sweet times. I again applaud you. As I told you, I'm covetous for my Friday nights. I'm covetous for my Saturday mornings. Right now, I want to be like still in my jammies making pancakes and watching cartoons. And you guys dragged those kids out here. If you doubt your loved one loves you, look around you, okay? Maybe you got a sense last night of what I meant by this is kind of a different kind of marriage conference. I'm really pushing you this weekend. I'm making this as complicated as it is, okay? Half of what I do in my life is put bad marriages back together, and I'm essentially telling you how I do it. This is the way I think about marriages when I put them back together. And you know, church leaders or school people or whomever are always asking me, you know, how can we, what can we be doing to help marriages? Why are there so many divorces? And a lot of the reason is because our culture doesn't take seriously enough how complicated this really is, okay? How complicated it is to be married well. There's a lot going on and marriage is hard. I am wanting to teach you how to make hard work, okay? So I'm pushing you. Legitimately. Years ago, we had a men's prayer breakfast at First Pres in Jackson, where I attend, and we had a marriage expert come and speak. And he spoke for more than an hour about the intricacies and dynamics and subdynamics of the paradigms of the marital dyad and the relational interaction between spouses at the atomic and subatomic level. And, you know, and he goes on and on for like an hour. And finally, he closes in prayer. And in that little silence between when you say amen and when the chairs start to push back, this old elder in our church, this guy's like old as Alabama, man, okay? He says, loud enough for everybody to hear him, he says, "I'm just glad I got married before it got so complicated." So I'm apologizing for how complicated this is, but I think it's important for you to get this vibe. Like I say, this ain't about communication skills. Last night we talked about four areas that we have to have ticking, five essentially, to make life work and to have relationships at work. We call them the four I's. Intimacy, can I be close? Can I let you in, keep you in? Identity, can I be me, but can I make room for you to be you? Imperfection, can I make sense of the yuck out in the world and the ways you disappoint me? And can I make sense of the ways in which I am not what I wish I was, or how I am a failure? And impulse control, can I manage my emotional world rather than be reactive? And most importantly, do I have an open, repentant heart? Am I willing to say, yeah, I'm part of the problem and I want to grow, all right? So our point last night was that we struggle in our marriage not because our spouse is a jerk or we married the wrong person, but because we're all lacking character abilities that God created us to need in his image in order to make relationships work. And actually, if you think about it, to make all of life work. I mean, how's your job going to go if you can't risk failing? Or how's your obedience to God going to go if you can't manage your impulses to do what you feel like doing? Get it? These are the software that makes our innards work, okay? What we're going to do this morning is we're going to look at two of these in more detail. Essentially, we're looking at intimacy and identity. Obviously, first we're going to look at what intimacy means and what it looks like to be close. But then we're going to talk about conflict. But that fits under identity because if I'm going to be me and you're going to be you, we're going to have conflict, okay? And that's not actually a bad thing. In fact, conflict that involves me trying to be me and you trying to be you, if we can resolve that well, it actually creates more intimacy, okay? You codependent doormats, you heard it here. Conflict's good, all right? So we're just going to unpack the two of those. I wish we could unpack them all, but I'm about to have a podcast open up called Good Enough Living, and it's going to have like a jillion things on it with marriage and parenting and stuff about therapist training or how we grow, or it's got a lot of my sermons on it. Indulge yourselves. I think it'll be up in the next week or two. Aren't I getting real 21st century here? I'm really proud of myself. I'm a 1960s boy. All right, let's get started with intimacy. Like, you know, if you're going to have a marriage, you might want to learn to get close to one another. I don't know. Now, guys get a lot of stereotypical hassle about not being good at the whole intimacy thing. It's not always the guy, trust me, but it's often deserved. This joke kind of communicates where us guys usually are regarding intimacy. This little boy and this little girl are playing, and they're playing house. And she says, "Hey, little Johnny, you want to play house?" He's like, "Sure, what do you want me to do?" And she says, "Well, I want you to intimately communicate your feelings." And he says, "I have no idea what you're talking about." And she goes, "Good, you can be the husband." And so, ladies, you want, you know, romance and poetry and, you know, a guy whose favorite hobbies are committing myself more deeply to relationships and how can I grow to improve myself. But instead, you get us. You know, if you're marrying a Southern guy, you're dealing with a guy who's, you know, our ultimate expression of emotional endearment is spray painting your name on an overpass. So, you know, there's a lot of problems here, okay? But understanding what real intimacy and connection is about, especially in marriage, is what marriage is for, okay? Naked and not ashamed, remember? That's how this all started. And when the Bible tells us that, it's not describing the first nudist colony, okay? It's describing a relational status. Try this on. It's saying that when Adam and Eve were whole and before sin, they were able to be completely naked, completely who I am, and it was loved, not ashamed. I'm able to bring my heart to you, and it's always welcomed. I'm able to fail you, and it's always forgiven. I'm just able to be myself, and it's loved. The more you know about me, the more deeply connected we get. I'm naked, and it creates more harmony. Now, try that on. Anybody interested? We'll pass a sign-up sheet around. You know, and we would all sign because we were created for this. I think it's what heaven will be like. Finally, that sort of freedom and intimacy. Again, it is not good for the man to be alone. And when God says that, that's not the invention of marriage. It's the invention of relationship. It's the invention of connection. So what we're going to be talking about this morning is what God calls abiding, what shrinks call attachment or emotional intimacy. Last night we called it, "Can I Let You In? Can I Keep You In?" And this talk is basically going to be expanding that. Now, I alluded last night to the fact that we're applying this right now to marriage, but as I alluded last night, the matrix for real growth is emotional intimacy. Not necessarily just in a marriage, but the parts of me that are broken or struggling or hurting or symptomatic that are alone will never grow. Things that are kept in secret, kept in the darkness, you'll never get better at. The places where you struggle and you're praying and you're praying and you're praying and no one else knows about it, bring a sack lunch, okay? When we bring those parts of us into relationship, somehow they grow. Intimacy is not just for kicks. Wow, it feels good to be close. God created us to need connection with Him and other people in order to be whole, all right? Now, that's a whole talk. I just want to acknowledge it, though, because though we're talking about intimacy as it relates to your marriage, this is a human core DNA issue. One of the questions I ask when someone comes to see me and they're hurting is, who else knows you're hurting? Because I'm interested in what's going on in terms of connection. And most of the times, the parts of people that are creating the symptoms for them are very, very alone. I've never talked to anybody about this, okay? So intimacy in general is like protons and electrons for our health. Let's apply it to marriage, though. We're going to look at three things regarding intimacy. We're going to look at what intimacy is and what it is not, just so we're all on the same page here. Secondly, we're going to look at some ways in which we struggle with it, some dynamics that go on between couples when they're trying to be close, some dances we do, and thirdly, how we can grow. So first, some levels. What do we mean when we talk about intimacy and closeness? You know, I just realized that everybody talks about how important communication and intimacy is in a marriage. You know, in fact, no matter what problem a couple comes to see me with, they can be beating each other over the head with pots and pans. But what everyone of them says is, "I think we just have communication problems." And I'm like, no, it seems like y'all are communicating that you hate each other's guts really well. I mean, that's just clear. Like, I'm hearing it. I mean, that's fine. That's not your glitch. But anyway, people are always talking about how we need better communication or whatever. And I'm thinking, intimacy, whatever. What does that actually mean? What are we talking about when we talk about that? So first, to understand intimacy and to make better sense of it, you got to understand there are different levels of it, different kind of concentric circles of it. In other words, talking about emotional connection is kind of like talking about being rich. It's a relative term. Okay, so being rich in, you know, Oxford versus being rich in Water Valley, those are different dynamics. Okay, likewise, we have different levels and dynamics of what intimacy is. So when one spouse says, I really want to know you, and to their spouse, that means, I really want you to know I like light starch in my cleaners, then we got problems, okay? So we need to get on the same page here. So let's look at some levels of what intimacy is, what intimacy is not, so we're all on the same page. First level of intimacy I talk about, I just call drive-through level. In other words, this is the level of intimacy wherein you say things like, do you want fries with that? Okay. In other words, this is the level of intimacy of people you're just crossing paths with. Push to on the elevator. How you doing? Fine. Basically, the only reason you're interacting here is because you're occupying similar space. All right. If this describes the level of intimacy in your marriage, please see me after class. Okay. Number two, I call news, sports, and weather. This is where we chit-chat. This is what we did this morning or do on the break, and that is, what do you think about that new chancellor? You know, is it ever going to stop raining? Did you hear about so-and-so? In other words, news, sports, and weather. Get it? Right? Now, most relationships begin at news, sports, and weather. All relationships go here at some point, and that's actually okay. You need to be able to do superficial. I had this friend in California when I was in school, and she was never superficial, okay? It was like a Seinfeldian character. If you see her on campus, you're like, hey, Sally, how you doing? And she's like, well, I've been having a lot of anxiety and some depressive ideation, and I'm having some real issues with my family of origin. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, me too. That's so weird, you know. So you got to be able to do superficial, okay? Got to be able to do new sports and weather. But if you just stay there, you'll be well-informed and you know all the scoop, but you'll be superficial. And, you know, some marriages settle into this, and all they do is talk about what happened today at work or the kids or, you know, the local scandal, and they kind of turn into the roommate phenomenon, you know. And these folks have kind of given up. So let's don't give up. Next level, I call TCB. Got any Elvis fans here? Taking care of business. Actually, it should be TCBB. Taking care of business, baby. All right. You know, this is, you know, Elvis's entourage, taking care of business, getting things done. I call it this level that because basically this is where we live practically with friends, coworkers, often with your spouse. This is what we did getting started this morning. I'm doing this now. This is where you solve a problem. You give an opinion. You teach. You inform. We talk about the surface level aspects of being me and you. Hey, I really liked L&M's restaurant. Back when it was, remember at North Lamar? God, that was my favorite. All right, that's a TCB statement. I'm giving you my opinion. We really need to stay within our budget. What are we going to do about Johnny and his ADD? So-and-so has happened. How are we going to resolve that? In other words, let me solve that problem for you, okay? Taking care of business, right? This is Martha in the Bible doing and working. It's probably where we spend most of our practical time. All right, and it's legit. I mean, if this was a talk on getting life done and being functional as opposed to that passive person we were talking about last night, that passive person needs this TCB thing big time, like an injection of it, all right? If we were talking about getting life done and all that, we could kind of stop here, stand for the benediction, all right? Making life work is important. So it's necessary. But if TCB is as far down as you can go, problem solving, opinions, thinking about things, your life is going to run like a sewing machine. You're going to be very functional and productive. People are going to like you. And granted, this is more intimate than anything we've gotten to so far. You are getting my opinions or my solutions. You're getting more about me than new sports and weather and drive-through. But actually, if this is as deep as you can go, relationally, if this is as intimate as you can be, your life will work well, but actually you don't know it yet, but it's actually sadder than that scene where they lock up Dumbo's mother, because there's going to be a real sense in which your heart will not be known, all right? In other words, this is a talk on intimacy, and marriage needs intimacy. In other words, TCBers, Adam had meaningful work to do in the garden, and God looked at that and said, not good. We got to get some human contact in there, all right? So God's talking in that moment about this division we're about to make, and that is, there's a place for work, but there's a place for human contact. So let's move on to level four. God calls it abiding, so will I, okay? All right, level four, abiding, intimate heart level connection. This is Jedi level, boys and girls, okay? This is where I get, actually, ironically, paradoxically, to you TCBers, paradoxically, this is where I am strong enough to give up needing to be Steve McQueen or Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, and have it all together, and instead really be who I am with the person I love, kind of warts and all. I'm strong and I'm weak. I'm good and I'm bad. This is let you in from last night, all right? This is the level at which I get to look in someone else's eyes and know that those eyes know me and know that those eyes know a lot of garbage about me. And I've seen those eyes hurting because of how I hurt them. And I see that those eyes still love me. Okay? You want that in your life. You don't get that at any other level than this one. All right? Here's another way of saying it. We all have, in essence, a true self. You know, your non-chameleon you. You know, the Chris Rock joke. Chris Rock's my favorite Reformed theologian. Next to Tarantino, right? Chris Rock said, when somebody first meets you, they ain't meeting you. They're meeting your representative. Somebody sent ahead to make you look good, all right? In other words, you know that kind of false self that we can create, all right? Well, true self is kind of the opposite of that. Who am I really when I'm by myself? Who is John? What's it like to be John? Like, what does it feel like to be John? What am I about? What's my subjective experience? Now, abiding is simply this, that true self shared, okay? I'm not building jet planes here. That true self experience of me brought into relationship. Let's think about it even superficially. You wake up in the morning, what do you experience? You go, oh, Monday. Is it still raining? Hope there's not a lot of traffic. God, I got that report due tomorrow. Ugh. But I have a fun lunch. You feel it? You hear the you communicated there, your subjective experience, that's you. Everyone shake hands with you, okay? In other words, that's your subjective experience, your intimate heart experience of who you are. Now, TCBers, that's why your spouse wants to talk to you about your day when you get home. It's not because they're secretly writing the life of Dr. John L. Cox, okay? It's because your subjective experience of your life, what it feels like to be you today, is you. They're wanting to know you, okay? They're not wanting to talk about every meeting you're ready to forget. They just want to know what it feels like to be you intimately, okay? Now, that's a superficial example. Let's go a little bit deeper. The real fun intimacy starts when we start to go more to levels of vulnerability or tenderness or meaningfulness or fear or hurt or joy or sadness. Let me tell you the same story twice and give you an example. TCB version. My daughter Bonnie finished college in nursing, and we prayed them through nursing school. We prayed her through nursing school, and she passed nursing school, walked the stage, and got a job. Her first job is actually, my office is at a hospital, in a hospital office building. She got a job at the same hospital. And so it was really cool because one day I was walking through the hospital and actually I ran into Bonnie working there in the hospital. Okay? Now, abider level four version. Okay, Bonnie has wanted to be a nurse. I can't tell you how long. But Bonnie's not the star student and she struggled. And there were lots of times in which we thought she was not going to make it. And we spent a lot of time on her knees and we spent a lot of time calling out, you know, nursing terms and helping her. And she passed. And she walked the stage. And then she started looking for a job, and she got a job at my hospital. So one day, I'm walking through the lobby of the hospital, and in front of me, I see this little blonde nurse. And I don't think anything about it. They're all little blonde nurses. It's like it's like Oompa Loompas. They're everywhere, you know, little blonde nurses, okay? And for some reason, this little blonde nurse stops, and she turns around, and it's Bonnie. And she's got her little badges and stuff. And we had this moment in the hospital, like the culmination of all of those years, in her little scrubs, hair in the little ponytail, stethoscope around her neck. Feel the difference? Good. Not rocket surgery. But you feel it. That's all intimacy is. There's nothing spooky and psychological. We're not rolling chicken bones here. I just gave you my heart the second time. Okay? Now, that's a skill you got to develop. Remember, we're talking about character abilities. The ability to bring my heart, something that we have to learn, like we said last night. If you're not so good at that, then I want your body of Christ people, I want you talking to your guys, and I want you to go, guys, I don't do this. I mean, Cox is talking about his daughter. I couldn't even connect to that. What is the deal? And your buddy's going to go, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, your dog died last week, and you didn't even cry about it. Like, where are your feelings, man? You know, they can help draw you out, okay? That's the way we do this. We learn intimacy by being invited, okay? Now, since this is a lot about feelings, let's talk about feelings just for a second. Because feelings get a bad name in evangelical Christianity, legitimately so. You know, our culture is so feeling-y. But historically, you know, the fat faith feeling train from the old Campus Crusade tract, the engine is facts and the car is faith and the feelings is the caboose. You don't really need a caboose, you know, and feelings aren't that important. And that's legit in a sense because our faith is fact-based. In other words, how I feel about what God is really doesn't have a lot of effect on the truth of his reality. And fact-based decisions like, does God exist or is that truck going to hit me? How I feel about it doesn't make that much difference. So that can legitimately make us see feelings as not so important. But relationally speaking, okay, this ain't the Council of Chalcedon. It's a marriage conference, all right? Relationally speaking, what we feel is core to who we are. If you and I had an interaction, a discussion about some non-emotional, non-relational issue, like, you know, how often you should change your oil, you'd forget about that in a week or two. But if I hurt your feelings, if I insulted you, Lord willing, I'll be back here to do a parenting conference in a year or so. You'd hear I was coming back, and you would say, you're not going to believe what that guy said to me like 2 years ago. Now, why? Because I'd hurt your feelings, okay? So to have a relationship in which people matter and hearts matter, feelings have to be a respected part of that, not just TCB. I was seeing this couple once, and she came in the door for the session ahead of him, and she was already crying, and she just sat down on my couch. She said, I'm so hurt. And he just said I was fat. And then he walks in, and he was this total TCB guy, total logical brainiac. I think he had built his own positron collider in his backyard or something. And he looks at me and he goes, well, she is, isn't she? I'm just like, vaya con Dios, Jose, you know? Good night, Vienna. And he was totally not connected to what it feels like to be a person, how people hurt, how people can be wounded, how people are vulnerable. Okay? So we're talking about sharing me, but this is also about, can I hear you? In other words, intimacy is also about what do I do and how do I care about what you feel? Can I let that matter too? I saw your faces, but did y'all feel what I felt about Bonnie when I told the story? You touched that, didn't you? That's empathy. You got it. That's what I'm talking about. You tried on what it was like to be me and let it move you. Do that in your marriage, and you'll be teaching the conference next year, okay? That's what you need to do. So one of the deepest ways that we can show love and do love in a relationship is by not just being able to bring my own heart and feelings, but being able to be available for someone else's. I walked through the room the other day, and Norma looked really down, and I said, "You look down." And she said, "Yeah, I'm depressed. I'm depressed today." And I stopped and I said, "Of course you are. I mean, your mom is so sick, and your shoulder's been hurting you so much, and there's that so-and-so thing going on at work. I don't know. Can't imagine that you wouldn't be depressed." And she started to cry, which cures depression. Why? Why'd she start to cry? Because I had seen her, because I had heard her, because I had let her in. Get it? Okay? We call that empathy. The greatest psychologist called it love your neighbor as yourself, all right? So, bringing who I am to the relationship, welcoming who you are in the relationship, great. Now, this is cool, but let's think about it. There's something uncomfortable about intimacy, right? People often get squirrely when I start talking about this kind of vulnerability. Why do you think that is? Why do we want to avoid going to that level of connection and intimacy? It's hurt, fear, vulnerable. Exactly. In other words, you'd think we're created for it. God made us for it. It's where we thrive the most. You'd think we'd be just going like, "Wee, here's my soul," you know, but no, we don't, because it's scary, you know? In other words, before the fall, the Bible tells us that Adam and Eve were naked and what? Not ashamed. Now, why does it say that so overtly? Because it's weird. In other words, the Bible is saying, in a sense, get this, guys. Adam and Eve, before the fall, when they were naked, they weren't ashamed. Weird, huh? That's his point. Because for the rest of us, when we're naked, we are ashamed. I'm not sure I want you to see real me. As I said last night, I'd rather you think I was 10 feet tall, good-looking, and bulletproof. But for you to see vulnerable me, that's scary. This is one of the problems of the human race, by the way. And that is that what we long for the most in the whole world is love, and what scares us the most in the whole world is the vulnerability of love. Think happy thoughts. We get very stuck there, okay? This is a huge reason that marriage is hard, because we all fear shame. We all would rather hide. We want love, but we're afraid of it. And marriage has this funky ability of just spinning all of our deepest pathology and vulnerability and all our yuck out into the open where we can see it. And I'm sure your spouse sees it, and I'm not sure I like it that she does, okay? This is one of the reasons that affairs can be appealing. You know, people will tell me, you know, "I love Trixie because she understands me." And I'm like, no, actually your wife understands you. She knows you're a jerk. You love Trixie because she doesn't understand you. She thinks you're amazing, okay? In other words, she's clueless about who you are, all right? Gotta love Trixie. Another reason sometimes we don't go to this level for intimacy is some people were never taught it. In other words, a lot of people just grew up in families where the inner world is just not something anybody talks about. So you say, "How do you feel?" And people are just like, "I don't know." I find that literally to be a skill we can learn. I'm working with a guy right now who literally, when he came to see me, it's like I'd go, "What are you feeling?" He had no idea. And he's actually developed the ability to kind of catch it, to actually be tuned into it. He's getting better and better at it. Funny thing is that underlying his issues was some real interesting depression. I knew first step is we had to get in touch with just what he feels in general, because depression is usually about parts of us that are cut off. We can talk about that in Q&A if you want. But as we've been just simply getting him in touch with what it feels like to be him, his depression has lifted. It's been kind of like a two-for-one bargain, but that's another show. Norm and I, some families never do this. Norm and I were at a restaurant years back, and this family of four walks in, you know, mom, dad, Billy, and sis, and they sit down at a four-top, and they each pull out a book, and they sit there, and they start reading. They didn't say anything to each other. They started reading. And they read for a while, and then the waitress came and brought menus, and they put their books down for a second, looked at their menus, folded their menus, went back to their books. A waitress comes, they all look up and order, and then they go back to their books. Norm and I are spellbound, okay? So then they bring their food, and they sit, and they eat with their right hand, they read with their left hand the whole meal. And we're like wondering, are they ever going to acknowledge one another? Are they ever going to speak? You know, we're ordering like more desserts because we want to like stay, you know, what's going to happen? And they went the entire meal without interacting with another, buried in their books. And I thought, what are these kids' marriages going to be like one day? You know, Billy's wife's going to say, Billy, where are you, man? He's going to say, page 32. So sometimes we just never learn it. Third reason I'm just going to brush on, I touched on it last night. A lot of times we when we talk about intimacy and connection, it sounds sweet and lovey, holding hands at the two top. But intimacy is also, I have a talk in a different marriage conference called Hard Intimacy. And that is, what do we need in our hearts to be able to hear our spouse say, you really hurt me, which is an incredibly intimate statement. Or I'm angry at you about last night. That is your deepest hurt. Thank you. Without getting defensive and scared and pushing back and freaking out. That's real intimacy, but that's hard intimacy. So sometimes I'm not sure I want to know your heart. Thank you very much. It kind of scares me. By the way, notice how scared we all are of our spouse's feelings. You know, it's like men are funny. It's like we're really afraid of our women being upset at us. Our wife goes, I'm angry about last night. And we're like, what? I didn't do anything. All of a sudden we're 5 years old. Like, he did. It was his Play-Doh, you know. Why can't I be a man and go, oh, babe, what happened? What hooked you? I care about that. I'm not scared of your feelings. It's one of the reasons men become fixers, because it's like, oh, no, mommy, don't be upset. Don't be upset. Okay, I want to fix it for you. Can we have the poise to go, yeah, babe, I can totally see how that hurt bad. What do you need? And in a minute, I kind of would like to tell you sort of my side of the story, which we'll get to in the next talk. But I hear you, man. Can I be that strong? Just saying. All right, so lots of reasons this can be hard, but it's core to us. We're created for it. So TCB Elvis, what she means when she says, I want you to hear her feeling, I want you to hear my feelings, or some abiders or guys, a lot of us guys are abiders. What we're meaning, what we're needing when we want to be close to you after work, whatever, is that for level four people, feelings are the deepest part of who we are. And if you want to develop real intimacy, you'll care about that. Now, that does, let me just caveat this. That does not mean that feelings are always going to make sense. Okay? One night, we were asleep, and Norma woke me up, like punched me in the arm. I'm like, what? She said, I just had this dream, and we were driving through the desert, and you just drove off and left me there. I'm like, well, go back to sleep. I'll come pick you up. I mean, what are you supposed to say to that? You know? So they're not always going to make sense, all right? I also think this whole abiding thing is the number one grounding for sexuality. Most people in my office who have trouble in the sexual parts of their lives are struggling in the intimacy or sometimes the identity issue of the relationship. In other words, sexuality really is, should be the physical expression of the emotional intimacy we're having. It's a language. Sex is a language of intimacy. God said, this is a way I'm going to let you be able to express you're my one, my only, my beloved, with my heart and my eyes and my skin and my body and my voice and everything together. It's genius, actually. And it's one of the reasons that sex outside of a committed relationship is not just destructive. It doesn't make any sense. How do you communicate that language to multiple people? Okay. By the way, TCBers, this is why sometimes your abider, connector spouse looks at you like you're crazy. If you've been off doing your own thing all day and disconnected, and then you want to get frisky. Because to them, it's sort of like you've said, all right, I hate America. Don't have anything to do with America. Let's take down that flag, red, white, and blue. I don't want to hear the Star Spangled Banner. But let's have a big 4th of July party tonight. And you're like, whoa, I thought you hated America. And he's like, well, I do, but I just like hot dogs and fireworks. What's the problem, you know? And to them, you're wanting the fun part of intimacy without the intimacy, you know? Anyway, on the other hand, sex is also a language of fun. It doesn't have to be all serious and all that. And TCBers get that, so don't knock it till you try it. Let's see. All right, another regarding intimacy question. A lot of times couples in the trenches will say to me, this is great, Doc, but, you know, we just don't have the bandwidth for this kind of intimacy and connection all the time. I mean, all the kids and all this junk going on, we don't, you know, to stop and get connected. Good question. Couple of answers. One is, you are correct. Oh, look, there's our eighth grade boy joke. You are correct. I ran across some research a while back that talked about that graphed marital satisfaction over the lifespan. And marital satisfaction, of course, when you first get married, is really high. And then you have kids and it drops down like this. And it kind of lives down here until your kids leave and are empty nesters, and it's back up there again. And so I always tell couples with kids, it's like, yep, you're living in the bottom of the U, okay? I used to teach this in my Sunday school classes at First Pres in Jackson. And, you know, we'd be dragging kids in the church on a rainy Sunday, and it'd be like, how you guys doing? And they'd go, we're in the bottom of the U. You know, it's, you guys are in the bottom of the U, all right? So, granted, that's true. But answer number two, intimacy isn't just about date night, okay? In other words, yeah, look for times that you can be y'all together, great, that's super. But some of the deepest connection I've ever had with my wife is across a gurney in an ER as we're holding each other's hands and our child is getting her broken leg set. And your eyes meet her eyes, and your eyes look scared, and so are hers. And y'all are in this together, and you're doing life afraid and loving each other and connected. And that is intimacy. In other words, again, we turn intimacy into this like Cinder Flowers thing. No, intimacy is my heart knows your heart, and your heart knows my heart, and we do this together. And I'm going to tell you, I'm scared. How about you, babe? Me too. That's intimacy. We're in the midst of it. You don't need to go on a date to do that. We don't do intimacy, we live it. Okay, so second answer to that trenches question is broaden your definition. Intimacy is what you do all the time as you just are you with one another, okay? Which reminds me, we're pushing on this intimacy thing because it's our topic, but remember, both TCB and intimacy and abiding are both important. I mean, practically speaking, this intimacy thing is not what you're going to spend most of your time doing. I mean, we have to do TCB to function. You know those couples who are both just abiders, and they just live in abiding oneness all the time? And, you know, they have a family tree house, and they make Chinese lanterns, and, you know, they have like six kids in dirty diapers and two rusty Subarus in the garage, and nobody's running this love fest, you know? The reason they have a family tree house is to hide from the bill collectors, you know, because nobody's running this thing. You know, that's one of the reasons us abiders married the TCBers in the first place, because they feel really kind of grounded and practical compared to us, and they kind of help make life happen while we're emoting about everything. And then later on, we resent them for it, for being so non-emotional. Oh my gosh, you're so non-emotional. Okay, whatever. The goal is to grow toward the middle, for us abiders to get more frontal lobe, for you TCBers to get more emotional, okay? Now, another balance. We've been talking about essentially let you in. There's also the issue of keep you in. In other words, as we said last night, y'all connectors are getting all excited about how we're talking about closeness and connection. But the question we got to ask is, what do we do with love when we get it? In other words, can we trust it? Can we hold on to it? What you expect to hear from a marriage conference is you guys need to be sharing your hearts more. You know, you need to be more open with your feelings. And that is exactly one half the story. The other half the story is our deficits and our limitations in keeping you in, trusting love, not being insecure, not needing reassurance all the time. That growth is just as important as your growth. And our growth in terms of learning to trust and not needing to talk all the time and know that we're still okay if you're watching the game is as important in a marriage as that other spouse learned to be more open, okay? You know that guy who said women need 5 meaningful touches a day to know that they're loved? Okay, I'm good with that. But my question is, what'd she do with the first 4? Just asking, okay? That's the question we need to ask. If we don't take responsibility for that, what happens is an abider who feels insecure and can't keep love in will need reassurance all the time from their TCB spouse that we're okay, and why aren't we talking more, which is going to drive that TCBer away because he's feeling demanded of all the time, which is going to make the abider kind of freak out and be more clingy, and we will start a dance. Let me talk about dances here for just a second because they're key. super secret to understand in a marriage. Marriage problems are never cause-effect, A causes B, cue ball hits the eight ball in the corner pocket, all right? Marriage problems are like that water cycle that you learn about in sixth grade science. You know, water evaporates, it precipitates, it condensates, it, you know. In other words, marriage problems are I do A, which makes you do B, which makes me do A worse, which makes you do B worse, which makes me do A worse, and on to infinity and beyond, okay? So I have this couple a while back, and she feels like her husband's really controlling. And she wants to be herself. She wants to exist in the relationship. And so she says, this is who I am. I disagree with you. I think this. Now, she thinks he's kind of controlling and wants to fit her into his mold. So she does say it with a little sass, got to admit. Now, when she does it, he hears it as she just doesn't even respect me at all. Everything I say, she feels like she needs to disagree with. So now he's kind of angry. And you know what he does? He gets critical and controlling of her. Oh my gosh, all you want to do is everything's your way now. Which she then hears as controlling, which makes her be more sassy and more, this is who I am. And you see how the cycle is building? And they'll just keep doing that. All right? So let's look at a couple of dances with intimacy. All right, sometimes you'll have a real abider married to a real TCBer. And again, these are on a continuum, but it's good to have some categories. And the biter comes with all these feelings. I'm sad about this. I'm mad at my friend about that. I wish all this and that and the other. And all these level four feelings. Now, what does the TCBer say? Well, why don't you take up jogging? Or next time she calls, let me talk to her. I'll tell her where she can put her carpool. You know, that's TCBer there. Okay. Now, why do they do that? They do that because they're jerks. They do that because they don't care. No, they do that because they're TCBers. They live at that level three problem-solving area, okay? You're just getting off at different floors. Let's not do the blame marriage. Nobody's the bad guy here. This is just kind of their language. If you're speaking emotional, connected, intimate, level four feelings to somebody who lives at a problem-solving level, it's like no habla, you know? No speaker de language. You know, this program has performed an illegal operation and we'll be shut down. You know, it's like, okay, so they will have to do some learning there. Anyway, so a biter wants to be all close and intimate. TCBer wants to fix it and kind of be done with it. And in fact, they kind of have an emotional need to fix it and be done with it. TCBers often think I'm not emotional, but it's an emotional need you have to fix things, but whatever. So anyway, all that fixing and Netflix doesn't feel too good to the abider, so what do they start doing? And we're going to start our dance. They start demanding closeness from Elvis and criticizing him for being such a distant flatliner. All you want is sex. Instead of getting married, you should have stayed in the frat house. Living with you is like living with an android, which of course woos him to her, you know. In fact, what happens is, how does he hear this? And actually the worst way that a problem solver ever could. You're a failure. You're making me unhappy. However hard you're trying, I'm still not happy. So what does he do? He does the exact thing that a biter wants the least. He pulls away. He doesn't want to hear this anymore. He's out in a swamp somewhere. He's on the golf course. Which, let's continue our dance. Now, a biter is really freaking out. He's on Timbuk emotionally somewhere, and she's never. And you see how this can just go on and on and on? So a super important piece of understanding your marriage is understanding and learning what your dances are. We'll talk more about that in the next talk. All right, what intimacy is, levels of it, problems with it, dances with it. How do we grow here? Let's give us each side, TCBs and abiders, some growth thoughts. Number one, TCBers, let's talk to you first. Number one, see the relational world is valid. Hope you're getting that. I'm not being too subtle about it. A lot of guys feel like if we're going to be emotionally connected, it means we got to kind of like open up on the golf course. You know, guys, I got this aching void within me. You know, before we tee off, I just need to, you know. No, intimacy just means you have some relationships where you get to be not alone, okay? That's all we're saying here. You know, for us guys, there's a lot of talk nowadays about how women are into relating and men are into achievement and goal attaining, you know, Venus and Mars kind of stuff. Then there's some validity to that, but don't buy the whole enchilada on that one. Think about how this whole marriage thing began. I mean, God didn't come to Adam in the garden and say, Adam, I know you're just fine with your ESPN and your mountain bike, but I'm going to create this woman, and how do I say this? She's going to need a lot, okay? You're going to have to, like, learn communication skills and to, like, share your feelings. But we've been through a lot, Adam. Do this one for me. No, that's not how it started. How did it start? God comes to Adam and says, I see you, the man, alone. It is not good for the man to be alone. I see you in a place of deep need. Let me give you something to complete you. God was looking at how emotionally needy us men are. To the degree that we aren't seeing that emotional need as valid, realize that we're a little out of step with the rest of creation. Those of us who've grown up sort of saying, like, the whole emotional connecting world, that's weak or you shouldn't be that way, there's a little out of step there. God tells us everything else is in a place of longing. Paul says it's groaning. So if you're not groaning, if you're not feeling longing for more connection, check your ticket stub, make sure you got off on the right planet, because the rest of us are groaning, okay? And if we don't recognize it, usually there's fruit of it somewhere else in our lives. That's why you'll see guys get into depression or anxiety or loneliness or porn or whatever. It's usually because that heart level thing is missing. All right, number two, TCBers, learn what it means to be with. We touched on this last night with somebody who asked a question about fixing. A lot of TCBers feel like what they need to do when someone is hurting is, I got to reach in there and fix it, you know, which of course is a pain. What a nightmare. I'm minding my own business and there's this person constantly emoting with these problems that I have to, like, pause the TV and fix. Ugh, I'd run away from them too. All right. Good news, gang, TCBers, male or female, you don't have to fix. In fact, let me give you a little model for how I like to think about being with other people in their pain. I call it blow off, with, or fix. Blow off is basically where we say, I don't want to hear it, get over it. Fix is where you try to fix it and repair it, make it all better. And with is going to be something beautiful. Learning what it means to be with someone and get it and care and be present with them. With is God's favorite preposition. Go look it up. He uses it all the time. Lo, you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will make it all better. No, I'll be with you. Emmanuel, God with us. Lo, I'll be with you always to the end of the age. I'll be with you. Weep with those who weep. Look it up. With is an emotional position. With is an emotional orientation. Your kid doesn't like their dinner. Blow off says, well, think about the starving kids in India. Eat your dinner. You're lucky you have any dinner. All right. Fix is, well, baby, we're going to get you some chicken nuggets. With is, dude, I get it totally. We don't always get what we want for dinner, and that's not always fun, is it? But, you know, as they say on TV, it's what's for dinner, all right? But at least I'm acknowledging. Someone goes to a death. Blow off is, you know, throw Bible verses at them or something. Fix is, hey, after the funeral, let's go have a party and just, like, blow it out, man. With is, I don't even know what to say. We love y'all. We're going to walk this with you. Please let us know what you need. We loved her too, so much. You know why you don't know what to say at a funeral? Because there's nothing to say at a funeral. Okay? Be with. Okay? An individual here this morning was talking to me about how she had been through something very painful, and what it meant the deepest and was the most healing to her was friends who would just be with her. And she found that when they just were with her, something would happen and melt inside of her and she would cry. And she said that created so much healing for her. Like Brian's question last night about how do you feel sadness? You bring somebody who loves you in the context of your pain with, and you will melt. So what does this look like with your spouse? They come in with a big disappointment. You don't need to fix it. Say, baby, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. You did all that work and there was no recognition from anyone. God, that feels terrible. What can I give you? And you know what? 99 times out of 100, she'll say, nothing. I just wanted you with me. I just wanted you to know. And you're done. Love accomplished. Mischief managed, all right? Just go, just walk away. Just put that little star in your Bible. Okay? Right? That's all intimacy is, okay? I'm just with you and I'm loving you. By the way, I had a TCB guy ask me once after a conference, he goes, "Yeah, but what if her feelings are wrong?" I'm like, "Okay." And he goes, "Yeah, I mean, she says everybody in the church hates her, and that's not true. What if they're wrong?" And granted, most of our wounded or pathological feelings are incorrect. But in order to heal a feeling, you got to hear it first. Okay? The three H's, healing, heals, hurt, we'll talk about later on. After I feel heard and understood and gotten and with, you can then say, "Hey, by the way, I've learned some things that might mitigate against these feelings you're having. If you're interested in hearing them, let me know on your terms, okay? Otherwise, I'm back to fixing again, all right?" All right, pursuers, abiders, our turn. What do we need to hear? Number one, learn to ask for closeness as opposed to showing disappointment and being critical. A lot of abiders want to be closer, and when they're not, they get kind of ugly. A woman in my office the other day said that, you know, I was sitting there eating supper with my husband. He was on his phone the whole time during supper, and he's always on his phone. It's like, I just want us to be together. So I said to him, "Can you like put down your phone for like just 5 minutes?" I'm like, "Ooh, I bet that really, you know, drew his heart to yours." Okay. In other words, a lot of what we will do is we will say, "I want more closeness," and yet I'm going to beat you up for not giving it to me, which is going to actually create more distance, the very thing I want the least. Okay. So learn to say, you know, "I'd love to be closer with you. Can we work that in our plans?" Rather than, "Oh my gosh, we never do anything together anymore." You feel the difference? What this says is it starts out by saying, you know, if you say, "Would you be willing to for us to get together and eat?" When you ask questions and invite rather than criticize, what you're saying is, "I'm not going to be demanding. I'm not going to be critical. I'm putting that down, putting down the big disappointed vibe." Because that disappointed vibe is what's driving your TCB spouse away in the first place, okay? Another Chris Rock joke. He said, when your woman says, "I wish we talked more," what she's saying is, "I wish I talked more, and you sat there and shut up and listened," all right? And that's often why the TCBers don't connect more, okay? Now, think about it. I had a wife and three girls. I lived with four women. All they did was talk, okay? And it's like, I just kind of was like, you know, I always wanted, you know, those guys on the line judge in tennis, you know, and the guy's like, everybody, the crowd's all going wild. And he's like, "Quiet, please." And everybody's quiet. I'm like, I need that guy, you know. Can we get one of those for the house, you know? "Quiet, please." Just put it in the den, you know. He just sits up there. All right, number two, share your feelings, but remember, your feelings are your responsibility. Share your feelings, but they're still your responsibility, okay? In other words, what that sounds like is this. A lot of us abiders will say things like, "I feel lonely in our marriage." Trojan virus hidden implication being, "What are you going to do about it, pal? I'm not happy. Fix it." Okay? Responsibility says, "I'm feeling lonely, and I just want you to know. I don't really know what's going on with me about it. I'm talking to Body of Christ people, maybe about me, but at least I wanted you to know." Okay? Be with me. You hear how different that is? You hear the responsibility you're taking? Just because you have a feeling, be careful about bringing it in a way that implies your spouse is supposed to do something with it. The goal of intimacy is to be known, not to have your spouse make you feel better, okay? A lot of us abiders need to remember that. Another way of saying this is the fourth I. Sharing your feelings is different than doing your feelings. So you freak out in anxiety and then go, "Oh, I'm just sharing my feelings." You know, saying, "I'm kind of scared about your job," is real different from saying, "Oh my gosh, we're going to live in a trailer. Hey, I'm just sharing my feelings." No, you weren't. You were carpet bombing Cambodia, okay? Back down, right? And that's going to set your TCB spouse off, and you're going to have the dance, all right? Lastly, for us abiders, and this actually applies to everybody, have other resources in your life. Your marriage should have good intimacy in it, and it does hurt when you feel that intimacy lacking. But there's more to the story than that. I know this is a cultural no-no to say this, but I'm just going to jump out on the limb and start sawing. I don't think marriage was ever intended to be the sole resource for meeting our needs for intimacy. Well, maybe one kind of intimacy. Okay. In other words, as I said last night, God created us to have the deepest kind of sharing with our spouses, but the New Testament talks a lot more about oneness and connection and abiding in the body than it does about marriage. And we've turned marriage into this special little place for you two to get together, and y'all need some getaway time, and this is going to be the resource for all of your heart wholeness, and that is cultural. God never says that. He says love one another in the body, be connected in the body, and bring that fullness back to your relationship. As I said last night, our culture has lost a lot of that kind of connection, so we've invented things like therapy and small groups, which is cool, and we've turned marriage into this special, amazing place where we're supposed to get all of our needs met, and it's no wonder we're all disappointed, and it's no wonder singles freak out. Oh my gosh, I'm never going to get married. I'll miss out on the fount of wonder. So, to echo what we alluded to last night, to have a good marriage, have other life-giving people in your life. You go out into you need more love and connection. You go out connecting with your body of Christ people. Get close to them and come back full. Otherwise, what we have is marriages I see all the time where I'm trying to get all my emotional needs met by you, but you're trying to get all your emotional needs met by me. And we're going back and forth. No, I need this. I need that. Why don't you understand this? Because you don't understand that. And we have a phenomenon that we hear in Mississippi called two ticks and no dog. All right? So, abiders, what happens when we get filled up outside is we come back to our marriages already kind of filled up. I ate before I got to the party. And if your spouse is a little off, we don't freak out. We have some space. Okay? And then the dance doesn't start. All right. Let's take a break. Let's do, try 10 minutes or so, and we'll come back and we'll do conflict. Thank you very much.